The show is Live and Local. It's your connection to local music and more. And on the show today, we have trumpet player Jeff Helgeson, who's a member of the Traditional Jazz Orchestra in Champaign-Urbana. They're going to be playing at the Iron Post tonight, as they do every first Tuesday of the month. And also on the show, Ken Perlman, banjo player, who, along with fiddler Alan Jabor, is going to be playing at Techline on Green Street in Champaign tonight. So a nice variety of music for you, I think. Hope you'll enjoy it. Our programs today are made possible with support from Sinfonia da Camera, presenting Extraordinary Voices on Friday, November 5th at 7:30 p.m. in the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. Baritone Ricardo Herrera joins Sinfonia in celebration of the works of William Schumann. More information is available at 333-6280. It's a composition by Frank Vignola called Gypsy Mania, and it's Frank Vignola and his trio. He's the lead guitarist, rhythm guitarist Vinny Raniolo, and the bassist Gary Mazzaropi here on Live and Local. That's from their CD called Looking Up. On today's show, we have first up Jeff Helgeson, who is somebody who has been in and around Champaign-Urbana, well, I guess all his life. Yep. And I've been hearing him for a long time and hearing of him for a long time, but never actually got a chance to meet him. And so today is the day. Thanks very much for coming in, Jeff.
Very good. Thank you for having me.
And the occasion is, the monthly gig by the Traditional Jazz Orchestra in Champaign-Urbana at the Iron Post, which is in downtown Urbana. Mm-hmm. And there, you have a gig on the first Monday of...
First Tuesday.
This is Tuesday,
that's
isn't
right.
it?
That's right.
It's behind
the way,
myself.
The way I remember is when you hear the sirens go off, that's the day. That's the day we're playing.
Do the sirens go off only the first Tuesday?
It's the first Tuesday, yeah.
Oh, you know, I was thinking it was every Tuesday, but I guess I don't hear them every Tuesday.
It's the first Tuesday.
So Jeff, my first question for you, Traditional Jazz Orchestra as opposed to, or I should say Traditional Jazz as opposed to what?
Well, the name of the band was chosen kind of to delineate what we play from both more modern, say, post-1950s popular jazz music, and some of the revivalist Dixieland music when the music of the 20s was kind of revived by people like Pete Fountain and Al Hurt, who were very, you know, in the limelight as far as commercial music. The music that this band plays, what we call traditional jazz, is really rooted towards the turn of the century through about 1920 or so. I think the name was chosen just to kind of give us a little separation and name recognition for a little bit different content that you might hear from other bands that that might have the same instrumentation but are playing slightly more modern music.
The instrumentation seems to be somewhat flexible, at least judging from photos on your website, where there's various additional people beyond the core, or are those just folks who just sit in?
Those are folks that typically are just sitting in. The core instrumentation is cornet, clarinet, and trombone in the front line, and then banjo and tuba. So you have basically all the components that you need. The bare bones components that you need for a group, and then we have some friends that have sat in with the band before. Dorothy Martirano sat in with the band on fiddle, and my dad's sat in once or twice with the band, and we've also, depending on the availability of the players, we've used Armand Baudouin, who's a local bass player, instead of the tuba, So we have some flexibility in that regard. So you'll see some differences in the personnel.
You know, as long as you've mentioned Dorothy Martirano and Armand Baudouin, I might as well just take a moment to say that they're both going to be on the show tomorrow.
Oh, really?
with their group called Tangato. They play some tango music.
Oh, great.
And I think they're playing at, I shouldn't even say this, I forget where they're playing. They're playing somewhere this week, so they're going to be playing on our show tomorrow.
Oh, beautiful.
With the rest of their group, so that'll be fun. I haven't heard them in that configuration. In fact, I haven't met Armand either. So your your membership, Morgan Powell on trombone.
Mm-hmm.
Is he the founder, you and he, or is there a founder?
Actually, Morgan organized the group with Tom Berkner, who's kind of the first call cornetist, but whose schedule doesn't always allow him to be in town.
So are you the substitute cornetist?
after a fashion, I am. But as it turns out, because of Tom's commitments during the school year, he's a teacher in the Belleville area. It's difficult for him to come up, except for during certain times of year. So we move it around.
And then Dan Anderson on tuba?
On tuba, and then Michael Miller on banjo, and Randy Solomon is typically on clarinet.
And all these guys are kind of original members of the group, or?
This group kind of found its roots with a group that was founded by Larry Gushy, who is now retired, but professor in the School of Music, and an ethnomusicologist, or rather a musicologist, whose specialty is you know, this music of this period of the turn of the century through the early 20s is very highly regarded. And he formed a group with a similar instrumentation to perform a bunch of music which was out of copyright and had kind of fallen under the radar of most of the bands of this instrumentation that were playing this kind of music. And so it was just an opportunity to kind of for them to introduce these kind of more obscure compositions. And so this is kind of an outgrowth of that. I think that Morgan and Tom really wanted to put together a group to kind of carry that particular niche of music forward.
And that group had a kind of interesting name, the New Golden Rule Orchestra.
That's correct, yeah.
What was that about, you know?
You know, you'd have to ask, you'd have to ask them.
1984.
Yes.
Looks like they got their mm-hmm. start. Well, why don't we hear the band a little bit? You brought some recordings. These are all live, I assume, from
yes.
somewhere or another?
Yeah, I think all of these are from, they would be all from the Iron Post, from various performance dates. I'm not sure the track that you got queued up there. I'm not sure exactly what date that was, probably November of last year.
So pretty recent. It's got a great name. Blues My Naughty Sweetie Gives to Me.
One of Morgan's favorites.
From the traditional traditional jazz orchestra here on Live and Local. Thank you. Traditional Jazz Orchestra based in Champaign-Urbana, and Jeff Helgeson, who's with me on the show today, tells me that that must have been from the Nature's Table reunion from just a few months ago.
Yeah, just the end of July, and I can tell because that's Tom Berkner on cornet, sounding great, of course.
And you're the other cornetist in the group. You're playing tonight. What time does your show start tonight?
It's 5 to 7.
5 to 7,
Iron Post.
First Tuesday of every month, downtown Urbana in the Iron Post. Difference between trumpet and cornet?
The difference has to do with the way the horn tubing expands and is coiled. In a practical sense, they typically look different. Cornets are kind of shorter and more compact, although they're the same length of tubing if you stretch the whole thing from end to end. But they also have a little bit mellower sound, different playing characteristics than a trumpet. Depending on the mouthpiece that you're playing with, you can get a you can get a little more a softer, mellower sound. But it'll bark if you step on the gas.
Is that a technical term?
Yes, that's it.
Do you? But you play them the same.
Yes, fingerings are all the same. The mouthpieces can be slightly different depending on the player. But from a practical sense, if you know how to play the cornet, you could pick up a trumpet and play it, effectively, and vice versa.
And that is, as the name implies, that's just the traditional instrument that one played then instead of trumpet.
Yeah, especially at the beginning of the century, trumpets were, it was very unusual to find trumpets being used for anything but marching music, and cornet was much more popular in the brass bands of the day, and so it was much more. There were many more of those manufactured, frankly, and it wasn't until the 30s or 20s or 30s that the trumpets started being making inroads, and they started designing them in such a way that they got more prominence.
They can probably play louder, the trumpet, I would think, and more brilliant.
Yes, it is. It's known more for being a more brilliant, brassier kind of sound, a little edgier, and especially instruments from that period. Trumpets were made with a smaller bore and had a very small bell on them, and you could make a lot of racket.
The orchestral instrument is typically the trumpet, although there's some big 19th century orchestra pieces where you'll have parts for a couple of trumpets and then parts for a couple of cornets, mm-hmm. which doesn't happen except probably at the highest professional levels most of the time, because not everybody has both instruments.
That's right. That's correct.
I actually learned on a cornet in fifth grade when we were allowed to take brass instruments. My mom was a trumpet double major in college, but she had a cornet. So that's why I played for a year, and that didn't last very long. Switched over to the French horn.
It's an unforgiving instrument.
Well, not much more than the French horn, I'll tell you. You just might make your mistakes louder. I don't know. You play all kinds of different music. You're not just a jazz player. Or are you mostly?
I'm mostly a jazz player. I dabble occasionally. I'll fill in if I'm forced to, but I like to leave most of the other styles of music. I mean, I play commercial music. I spent some time with Candy Foster and the Shades of Blue several years ago playing blues and R&B music. So it's
you played with them at the Folk and Roots Festival, I think, didn't you?
That could very well be. Yeah, I think I did.
Yeah.
So that's as part of getting out and making money so that I can afford to buy trumpet related toys. You get involved with bands that are playing clubs and whatnot. So I'm most of the music that I concentrate on isn't concert related, and it's more club or venue related. So jazz and blues and that type of thing.
What do you do when you're not playing music?
I actually work for a publishing firm here in town, Research Press, out in North Madison, Champaign.
And what do you do for them?
I'm a production manager out there. I've been there for about 10 years, and it's a kind of a niche producer of books and materials targeting counselors and teachers of at-risk youth and the like. So I handle the I make sure that the books get into the warehouse on time.
So that's a fairly legitimate publishing operation.
Right? Absolutely. I hope so.
As opposed to, I'm going somewhere with this, as opposed to the National Enquirer or the Weekly World News.
Right, yes.
Which I bring up because if you go to Jeff Helgeson's homepage, which is, what is it, shout.net/...
It's almost easier just to Google my name.
Yeah, that's exactly how I found it. But the first thing you'll find is trumpet players in the news with headlines like musician's head explodes trying to hit a high note from the National Enquirer, and man slides his trombone and kills musician in front of him. That's from the Weekly World News.
Yeah, those are...
Is this a hobby of yours?
I just think it's important to keep those things in the forefront so that the public's aware of the dangers of being a musician.
Although, that's the joking part of your homepage. It's an incredibly interesting and useful homepage, and nowhere on it could I find a biography of yourself. which probably said something about you.
Oh, I don't know. I think it that wasn't the purpose of the site, right. I guess, you know, when I put it together. Mostly, I put that site together as a way to distribute music material, you know, to trumpet players who are interested in jazz. And everything else is kind of just me fooling around.
Well, there's a page of notes from some of your own clinics, with things like improvisation. You talk about what tunes should I know is one of the topics on there. Alternate fingerings for the jazz trumpeter. These are really very practical. And then a lot of articles about trumpet players. Just the page I copied here starts with Clifford Brown, and then there must be a whole bunch of others.
Yep.
And, so if you're into the trumpet, and particularly the jazz trumpet, check out Jeff's page. His last name is spelled H-E-L-G-E-S-E-N. Just to Google Jeff Helgeson, and you'll get quickly to his homepage on shout.net. So you come at your trumpet playing pretty naturally. You mentioned obliquely your dad earlier, sometimes sitting in, who's a psychologist?
That's correct.
Yeah. Not psychiatrist, psychologist.
Psychologist, yeah.
Who also plays the trumpet.
That's right.
Jazz trumpet.
Mm-hmm.
Was he your first teacher or your inspiration?
I would say he was a significant inspiration. We had talked a little bit about the progenitors of this band, and there's really a long tradition of Dixieland and this style of music going back into the, you know, at least into the 60s here in Champaign-Urbana. I was born in the early 60s, and by the time I was two, my folks were taking me out to hear my dad's performances at that time at the Village Inn, which was, you know, the spot to go see
the pizza place out on Madison.
That's exactly right. If you're familiar with it, in the back there's a big area that's all pinball machines and games and stuff like that. That used to be a stage, and my dad used to play there with Rudy James and other local musicians, and a lot of the material that they performed there ended up, some of that material ended up being used with the Medicare 7, 8, or 9 group, and so there's a history there of those groups. There's also the university groups, you know. I'm getting back to my dad, you know, I was exposed to his music very early. He didn't teach me directly, but I learned a lot from watching him play and listening to him play.
Tom Berkner, who's the other cornetist in the band, you studied with him for a bit or not?
Well, he was my music teacher for a year at Central High School. We played in the University of Illinois Jazz Band in the early 80s. And then I was in the jazz band when he was directing the jazz program here in the early 90s.
So a long time mentoring, teaching, friendship.
Absolutely.
Relationship.
Yeah, Tom's a great teacher and a great friend.
And Morgan Powell is a retired composition, theory composition professor.
He was head of the composition division of the School of Music, yeah.
There's another interesting website, is to go to Morgan's website, because he's involved in a bunch of different groups.
Absolutely. He's, in addition to the traditional jazz orchestra, he also plays with the Boneyard Jazz Quintet and several others. And, of course, he's still very active composing. And so, there's all sorts of interesting things on his website as well.
Yeah, we're going to get Morgan in here one of these days with one of the groups that he plays in. Keep trying to get him in, and I'm sure it'll happen at some point. Jeff Helgeson is one of the two cornetists in the traditional jazz orchestra, which is really a quintet,
yes,
plus or minus. Anybody else sitting in with you tonight?
Not that I know of.
Not that you know.
Who knows?
If your dad shows up, what are you going to say? No, Dad, you can't sit in.
I don't know. I guess I'll have to think about that.
It's tonight from 5 to 7 at the Iron Post in downtown Urbana. And if you miss it tonight, it's every first Tuesday.
Whenever you hear the sirens.
That's right. If you hear the sirens, that's the day for the I'm going to have to remember that. That's a good...
That's how I remember it. Yeah.
Yeah, if it's not on your calendar, it better get there quickly. Well, we're going to go out with one. You had told me that of the tunes you brought along, there's kind of the title suggests it, Sobbin' and Cryin'. Are you on this one, I hope?
No, I think this is also Tom.
Oh, really?
Great. Yep, absolutely.
Well, we should have one that you're on here.
Well,
Do you know which one you're on? Black Bottom Stomp, High Society?
I think High Society.
For sure? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. We got to play that then. We got to hear you play. Jeff Helgeson and the Traditional Jazz Orchestra's High Society. Stay tuned for some Appalachian music for fiddle and banjo here on Live and Local. Programs on Live and Local are made possible in part by 10,000 Villages in downtown Champaign, celebrating their 25th year of fair trade retail in downtown Champaign. 10,000 Villages offers products from more than 30 developing countries, from Vietnamese ceramics and textiles to Bolivian musical instruments and international home decor. Thank you. My guest in this portion of Live and Local is Ken Perlman, who is a banjo player. At least one source calls him the Heifetz of the banjo, and referring to the violinist Yasha Heifetz. And he is going to be with fiddler Alan Jabour at Techline in Champaign on, tonight at 7 o'clock in performance sponsored by the Champaign-Urbana Folk and Roots Festival. And he's on the line with me from Lansing, Michigan, where I guess you're visiting some friends there in between tour stops.
Well, actually, we had a tour stop here as well.
So, excuse me.
That's okay.
And we're next. We're next. On your
that's
tour.
It. You're next.
Yeah. Tell me about the duo of Perlman and Jabour. How long have you guys been playing together?
Okay, well, we've been playing together about 10 years, and our specialty is the fiddle banjo duet, and we've taken that into new areas of complexity. But our focus is mostly Appalachian music, but we also do some music that I collected from old time fiddlers in eastern Canada, a place called Prince Edward Island.
And we do
all kinds of combinations of the two instruments, and we do all kinds of things to make the music as interesting and pleasurable as possible.
The tune that I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Sorry, go on.
Well, I was just going to say that the tune that we led with, "Billy in the Lowland" of Henry Reed, where does that come from? Appalachia?
Yes, Alan collected that tune from a fiddler named Henry Reed, and who lived in Glen Lynn, Virginia, right across the border from West Virginia, and I guess he had grown up in West Virginia, and Alan was. Alan's early collecting activities in the 60s and his work with the Hollow Rock String Band in North Carolina around that time were really the foundation of the current revival of interest in old-time Appalachian music. So most of the sessions and band activities around the country that have to deal with old-time Appalachian music can really be traced back to Alan's collecting activities in the 60s and the Hollow Rock String Band. Those were like major models for the old-time revival. And Alan collected not only from Henry Reed, but from a number of other fiddlers in North Carolina, Virginia, and West Virginia. And we play a lot of that music.
And this is from a CD called Southern Summits. Has a number of, quite a number of tunes from Henry Reed. Talk about the idea of collecting. What does that mean exactly? It's not like you go around, you know, with one of those little garbage stickers, you know, and pick up little leaflets and so on from the grass. You know, this is an involved process.
Well, it is, but I mean, instead of having a bag in which you collect things, you collect things usually on a tape recorder or sometimes in your own mind, and it involves not only turning the tape recorder on, but also getting to know the people and becoming friends with the people who play the music and understanding when to turn on the tape recorder and then having the ability to either learn the tune or write it down. And so both Alan and I have done collecting in different parts of North America. Alan, as I say, collected in Appalachia, and my activities are mostly in the Canadian Maritimes, which, like in a place called Prince Edward Island, which is up near New Brunswick in Nova Scotia. And it had a very vibrant old-time fiddling tradition of its own.
So when you say you collect a tune, does that necessarily imply that other people haven't collected that tune beforehand? Or is this generally considered to be original?
Sometimes it means that. I mean, you never know when you encounter a tune and you haven't heard it for the first time, you never know if no one, it has never been heard by other people outside the region. And obviously, within the region, it may be very well known. So I guess in a basic sense, it just means that you have documented the tune in some way. You've either written it down or got it in your memory, or you have it on tape. And then sometimes it may be just the particular version of the tune that's unique, or the style in which it's played that's unique. And sometimes the tune may be very well known elsewhere, but every once in a while you come across a tune that is totally unknown outside of its home region. And that's perhaps what you're really looking for.
It's often true, isn't it, that... or maybe even mostly true, that the tunes that you're finding haven't been, for the most part, written down. They're not necessarily compositions of the person you got them from, although they may be, right?
Yeah, it's possible in some cases they may be composed by the person you collect them from. Mostly they've been carried in oral tradition, or in some cases gone back and forth between oral and written tradition, but certainly the version that you're collecting is probably was probably learned from some other person orally and then reworked by the person you've collected it from.
And of course, when you guys record it, perform it and then record it, ultimately you're probably not going to play it literally, and so this becomes your version.
Well, in many cases, although, both of us, I think, try pretty closely to mirror the spirit of the original and remain as close as possible to what we learn, but of course it's inevitable that there's some drift over time. If you've been playing a tune for 20 years, it's probably a little bit different from how you first learned it.
And do you typically write it down after you've collected it, or do you just keep it in your memory?
I think it depends. I mean, I usually never write a tune down unless I'm looking to teach it to someone or put it in a book. Up to then, it's in memory. I know Alan has only recently put a lot of these tunes down in published form, although I think he may have written them down much earlier for his own information. I did a book called The Fiddle Music of Prince Edward Island, where I wrote down, I notated about 400 of the tunes that I collected, and they're in a book published by Mel Bay, and Alan has just recently published a book on his own account called Fiddle Tunes Illuminated that has perhaps about 45 tunes with all the bowings and all the ornamentation and such.
Yeah. So memories being as memories are, things are inevitably going to get personalized somewhat, remembered slightly differently. It's sort of like that game of telephone, where you tell somebody the story who tells the next person the story, and then inevitably it becomes slightly different story. Let's have another sample from your Southern Summits CD, 21 Duets for Fiddle and Banjo is the subtitle here, with Alan Jabbour and Ken Perlman. I'm talking with Ken Perlman here on Live and Local. Maybe something that's not collected from Henry Reed.
Okay. Well, how about Sandy Boys, number 16?
Sure, Sandy Boys. So are these, again, people that from whom the tune was collected, or are these the composers, Ed?
Yes. Yes, those are the people from whom the tune was collected. There was a famous musical family in West Virginia, the Hammonds family, and those are that was another source from which Alan collected tunes.
Okay, well, it's Sandy Boys here on Live and Local, and Alan and Ken are going to be at Techline in Champaign tonight at 7 o'clock. Sponsored by Techline and the Champaign-Urbana Folk and Roots Festival. ¶¶ Sandy Boys is the name of that tune from Eden and Burl Hammonds. It was collected by Alan Jabour, who is the fiddler in this recording with banjo player Ken Perlman. Ken's my guest on Live and Local today, and Alan Jabour and Ken Perlman are going to be playing at Techline on Green Street in Champaign, 7 o'clock tonight. Do you come from Canada, Ken?
No, I don't. I originally grew up in New York City, and then I was living in Boston for many years, including when a time I did most of my collecting. And the Maritimes are very accessible from Boston. And then for a few years in the middle there, I was living in Bloomington, Indiana, but I'm back in Boston now. And Alan grew up in Jacksonville, Florida, and he spent most of his adult life in Washington, D.C.
Oh, I was just kind of curious how the two of you came at this collecting business, whether you had come by it naturally, so to speak, having grown up in Appalachia, but apparently not. How did you get into this business?
Well, essentially both of us were caught up in the folk revival of the 1950s and 60s. Alan's a little bit older than me, so he would have been pulled into it quite a bit earlier. And he became inspired by the study of ballads and folk song into thinking, well, he had had classical training in the violin, so he was thinking, well, gee, maybe there are some fiddle tunes that I can collect. And so he began to investigate fiddlers in North Carolina, which were near where he was in graduate school, and then he branched out and collected from fiddlers in Virginia and West Virginia as well. And as he was continuing to get deeper into the tradition, he happened upon Henry Reed, who turned out to be his major source and major mentor in fiddling. So most of this was done, as I say, in the 1960s. And then he brought the tunes back to Chapel Hill and Durham, where he was living, and a bunch of young people coalesced around the music, and they formed bands and had jam sessions, and there was a whole scene devoted to this music in this part of North Carolina. And as to myself, I was certainly inspired by collectors such as Alan and Mike Seeger and such, and I had that in the back of my mind, and I wound up being invited to spend some time in Prince Edward Island, and came across a huge population of fiddlers, and I realized they had never been that people weren't aware that there was even very much fiddling going on there, and I just loved the music, and I loved the people and the culture, and I just started spending some time there. And then I got a grant from an organization called Earthwatch to lead a team of people to collect the music and collect what are called oral histories, which I guess is reminiscences from the people who play the music. So we did that for couple of summers, and then I spent years collating the material and working with the material. And then I did a follow-up project in 2006 for the Canadian Museum of Civilization in Ottawa. And right now we're working on a big website devoted to the music, and within a couple years there'll be hundreds of performances available of this type of music online.
Is that website currently running or not just yet?
No, it's still under construction.
Okay.
It's going to be called a Bowing Down Home, Traditional Fiddling on Prince Edward Island. And as I say, it'll be sponsored by the Canadian Museum of Civilization.
You're not yourself a fiddler, though, at all, are you?
Excuse me? Am I a fiddler? No,
yeah.
I'm a banjo player. But
and
I've
guitar
kind
player.
Of lived among fiddlers enough that I kind of understand the dynamics involved in the process.
I might mention that just looking
and
at...
And I play the music on banjo.
Right. I might mention that just looking at Alan's biography, he was head of the Archive of Folk Song at the Library of Congress for a while, and
that's right,
director
yeah.
of Folk Arts Program, National Endowment for the Arts. Yeah, so and taught English for a while at UCLA. Not terribly long, it looks like, but...
Yes, I believe so. You taught English at UCLA?
Yes.
He taught English folklore and folk music.
Yeah.
At UCLA, but he was only there briefly, and then he was offered a job at the Library of Congress.
Yeah. Talk to me a little bit about this melodic clawhammer style of banjo playing, or I guess we should just first for our listeners talk about the clawhammer style in general, and then what have you done to it to make it melodic?
What have I done to it? Oh, that's a good question. Okay, well, clawhammer is a style of banjo playing that was brought over with the banjo from Africa, or I should say the idea of playing was brought over from Africa, because it's unlikely that they were allowed to bring their instruments with them on the ship. It's descended from a style that can still be found in West Africa for playing a whole slew of instruments that vaguely resemble the banjo, and its main characteristic is that it's a down-picking style. So instead of plucking up on the strings like with your fingers, as in finger picking, what you do is you pluck down on the strings with your wrist, and then your thumb kind of follows behind. And if you can picture, let's say, the operation of a flat pick on an instrument, you have your downstroke and your upstroke. Well, with clawhammer, you have the downstroke where you take the fingernail and you strike a string on the... it's sort of a point of contact, really. So the finger doesn't move, but the wrist moves, and the fingernail strikes the string on the way down, and then the thumb follows behind it and strikes a lower string. So then you get... and that's the equivalent of the upstroke of the pick. So you can get very rapid runs of notes that way, and that's essentially clawhammer. In simpler versions of it, you only use the thumb on the short drone string of the five string banjo, but in more advanced forms, you also use the thumb on the longer strings as well, and that's how you get the melody. And you also supplement it with a lot of left hand plucking techniques, which are in the trade are called hammer-ons, pull-offs, and slides.
Left hand, meaning the hand that's actually fingering the notes.
The fretting hand, that's right, yeah. Because in some cases people do use their left hand to pluck, it's true, but...
How about the what you've done to it part?
Okay, what I've done to it, and I should say I'm not alone in this, there are quite a number of people who have gotten into this over the years. Adapting the style so that you play the complete melodies of fiddle tunes with all of their nuances instead of an approximation of the tune is, you know, relatively easy to accomplish with the particular mechanics of the style. So there's a general tendency to sort of strongly simplify the tunes and to play just that So in the melodic style, we go beyond that and treat the instrument as an instrument instead of just a limited accompaniment medium.
So the clawhammer style typically, or at least originally, is more accompanying. But then there's other styles of banjo playing, you know, sort of, I presume, the flattened Scruggs type variety.
Wait a minute. Oh, hang a second. The signal's breaking up. Could you repeat that?
Yeah. There are certainly other styles of banjo playing which are more melodic traditionally.
That's right. But the thing is, even clawhammer, if you look back at clawhammer historically, in its earlier incarnation and first incarnation in the mid-19th century, when it was there was a whole musical movement known as the minstrel banjo. We don't have any recordings of that because it was too early, but what we do have is instruction books, which were known as tutors. And if you look at those instruction books, the players of that era were definitely interested in producing full, complex melodies on the banjo in clawhammer style, which then was known as stroke style. And it's only been really in the more modern revival of the style that this sort of trend toward oversimplification has occurred. And so it's not something that's really completely typical or traditional of the style of playing, but just something that has grown up within the context of the old-time music revival in the last couple of generations.
We're talking with Ken Perlman, banjo player, who's going to be joined by fiddler Alan Jabour tonight at 7 o'clock at Techline on Green Street in Champaign, co-sponsored by the CU Folk and Roots Festival. Well, let's go out with another tune from your CD here, Southern Summits, with duets between the two of you. And you can, you know, it would be great to find something that really especially illustrates the style that you're talking about. And
perhaps, why don't you play the Honeymoon, because that's a tune that we got from a fiddler on Prince Edward Island named Archie Stewart. And there's a section in there where the fiddle actually backs up the banjo,
which is a nice turn of events, I guess.
Right. Fair play.
I think so. It seems like it. Archie Stewart, again, he's the person from whom this was collected, I presume?
That's right, yeah. The Honeymoon is a very old tune.
So this is kind of his version of it.
Actually, it was one of the first fiddle tunes ever recorded in North America.
Wow. So this is his take on that tune, and then your take on his take of that tune, I guess.
That's right.
Ken Perlman and Alan Jabour will be tonight at the 7 o'clock at Techline. Appreciate you joining us very much on the show.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
The Honeymoon from Archie Stewart here on Live and Local.